Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
All right, welcome to Ringside Wrap. Rich Tate and Mike Sempervivi. Yeah, Mike Sempervivi with you tonight, and not sure where Les is at. Hopefully gets in here shortly. Ugly week of stuff to talk about. Then we might as well just go ahead and kick it off at the beginning here. The Monday Night Raw COO storyline, is this thing totally tanked or what?
In the negative story, I don't know. Obviously, the story won't tank, but Raw sure as hell did on Monday. I mean, again, when the best pro wrestling of the last, you know, I don't know how long has been Chael Sonnen for the UFC. I mean, Raw was bad, and I don't know if you were on Twitter Monday night. It was just like, I think maybe it was when actually they fired JR, where it was just like, I can remember JR, that them throwing it back from a piece in Mid-South on Dr. Death, going back home to the University of Oklahoma, and there he is with Barry Switzer, and there were these things called weights, which, you know, I got in the weight room and started pumping iron, and it's like, and I remember them throwing it back to JR, Michael Hayes is there, and he's like, oh, God, you know, they haven't even played Georgia yet, and it's like, I'm remembering this random stuff from whatever it is now, 25 years ago now. And I remember sitting there watching this stuff. I don't know who, no one is ever going to remember. And I guess maybe that's the good thing, is the show was so bad, I think people are going to try to put it out of their memory banks forever. And hopefully it gets erased from, but it's just, it's, Monday was almost everything that was wrong with that, with what's been going on, all kind of coming to a head with this disjointed, big pile of just a mess, just an embarrassment. I was embarrassed for, I mean, I felt embarrassed to be a wrestling fan again, you know, what's left of it. And it's just like, you know, again, maybe this thing is passing me by for good here, but it was that bad. But
well,
it was,
you know,
more,
well,
I was more
let,
embarrassed
let me,
for everybody else.
Let me interject there. Embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. Was it bad stuff? Yeah. Did it embarrass me to be a wrestling fan? No. I mean, they've done, my God, they've done much worse shit that was more embarrassing. But, you know, yeah, I was all over Twitter. Of course, you know, you and I did a couple of exchanges on Twitter Monday night, and it was, there was one point, it was, hey, you know, paging George Scott, clean up on aisle Raw. Yeah. And just in time to join us to talk about the debacle, Les Thatcher. Les, how you doing tonight, sir?
I don't Twitter, so
there you go. I'm still waiting for you to unveil that thing, but you know,
it'll never happen. You won't
there
live
you
that
go
long. I won't live that long. So that's
so. Anyway, I mean, you know, the whole thing, the firing of Jim Ross, that was just dumb. The whole Vince coming out and moving Triple H. I mean, here's the thing. Last week, you know, I believe it was Les. You said something. I think it was you. May have been Mike, but something to do with, well, you know, what are they going to run a test pattern next week? That actually would have been more entertaining.
Well, you know, I have talked to several people. I have listened to several reports, you know, post-game shows or whatever you want to call it. I've talked to several. I have yet to hear anything positive about this particular thing. You know, I said to Mike Johnson today, I said, here's the deal. It's the only game in town. Now, somebody there thinks this is earth-shattering, historically significant, cutting edge. I'm not sure what the hell they think, but, you know, you don't want to, I mean, there were so many logic holes, so much stupidity, so much craziness in this whole thing. The only consistency was that Kelly can still scream well and still sucks as a wrestler, quite frankly. But It's just crazy. I don't know. I have no earthly idea where they think. You know, the bottom line of this is, you know, whatever kind of automobile you own, as long as the automobile performs up to your expectations and you get value received for it, then do you really care if the upper management of General Motors or Ford or whatever kind of car you have are having difficulties with one another? You know, it's still, you know, they can call it, well, Punk called it professional wrestling, and Hunter still says, shut up and fight. Oh, come on, Hunter, it's all right. You can't get fired. It's impossible. It's wrestling. It's professional wrestling. So at the end of the day, the majority of people, whether just casual viewers or whatever, that tune into this expect to see professional wrestling, and they're not. You know, I mean, it was just the thing with the three suck-ass baby faces on the front end was, you know, it didn't do a thing for them. You know, if you're playing James Bond, then you should play in a James Bond movie, you should be James Bond. That should be your personality. That should be who you are. Punk became somebody else. I know it's been commented on by 10 million people. Cena saying, well, some of these people have never had a boss before. My God, John, if they cut lawns or carried papers in high school, they had bosses. I mean, it was just nobody thought this thing out, period, end of story.
Well, you know, even going beyond that storyline, let me throw this out at you guys, and I'm pretty much guess that Les is probably thinking the same thing I was, because you say this kind of stuff all the time, but Laurinaitis comes out and says, you know, I've reinstated these guys, here they come. You know, he stops Cena and Alberto and says, here comes R-Truth and The Miz. Well, you know, they're down there waiting for them to come to the ring. You know, these guys just beat the crap out of me with a pipe a few weeks ago and just brutalized me inside a cage, and I'm just going to wait for them to get there and the bell to ring. And then on top of that, you know, by the way, it's going to be a tag match, and I'm going to stay over here in the corner until my partner tags me. No, I'm beating the hell out of them, you know?
I didn't get
the logic of, hey, we're going to have a match. No, we're not going to have a match, and we're going to kick their
ass. Well, that's the other thing, too. Isn't this about there's too much confusion, but yet after the new regime was put into place, there were run-ins, and then this whole thing with him come out. First of all, you know, they started a match, and he comes out and says, stop the match. And I'm going to make this now a tag match, and you guys are partners. And I think, correct me here if I am wrong, but two guys who are going to be opponents on the next pay-per-view have been partners how many times? This is the 10th month of the year. How many times in the last 10 months has that happened? At least four, five maybe? It's bullshit. I mean, there's as much confusion and run-in. I mean, you know, as craziness going on here as there was last week or the week before. So what's the change? I just, you know, I mean, again, none of it makes any sense. None of it makes any sense. And I think the way they lost mass audience in the second hour shows that, too. You know, I never watch any of this. I never watch any of this stuff in real time anymore because, honestly, I have, you know, adult programming that I pay attention to and find more entertaining. But I'd heard so much negative about this on post-game stuff on Tuesday is that I didn't fast-forward through anything Tuesday evening because I honestly wanted to see how bad it really was. And it was everything that was hyped, you know, to be that bad. It's the only game in town. Somebody there thinks it's, you know, groundbreaking, earth-shattering, historically significant, and it's not. It is, I guess, if you're looking for illiteracy and ignorance and sophomoric nonsense. But other than that, I don't see any value. I can't even imagine where they're going. I don't even care where they're going. And they want a guy with integrity. And then Laurinaitis comes out, who has been showing over since Triple H walked in the door that he's behind the scenes pulling strings and manipulating people. So it's just, you know, I guess it's a stance that, well, all you people are stupid, and since we have the only game in town, you'll buy whatever we're selling.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, and this is, you know, for listening to that one, they've done more embarrassing one-off things you know, the HLA thing, and that's actually one of the few times where I actually was like, okay, I stopped watching for a month after they did that, and it was 3-minute warning came out, and, you know, ended up breaking the girl from UPW's ribs, and that whole thing, where it was just like, I turned it off for a month. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give myself a break on this, because I don't know. Obviously, I know it's not aimed towards me anymore, but, like, I don't get it. Should I even bother to keep watching this? And I ended up going back to it, because, you know, that I did. But this was another show where, and I'm not going to stop because I do a job to actually watch this stuff, but it's to me it was one of the worst shows I've ever seen, just because it was the culmination of everything we've talked about, all of these warning signs, everything just coming to a head where the entire show, I mean, from talent getting buried, talent being stupid, you know, it just... Every single little show's thrown together at the last minute without long-term planning. Storylines that don't make any sense. Characters people don't care about. Your world champion, your titles, which mean absolutely nothing. Your promotion to make money, to get people to buy a pay-per-view. Okay, you name matches, but does anyone even know when the pay-per-view is? You made a big deal about Alberto, you know, and this whole thing with Mexico. They used to hype up where they would go, and they'd have a little flag on the screen. Not one mention that they were going to do. They were in Mexico for the first time, and you know, you'd think that they want to have Sin Cara and Del Rio, and they want to have a Spanish presence. They have been serious about this in talking about it. Why would you not want to promote this? I mean, it's from top to bottom, inside out, embarrassing. And I am under the impression and. Obviously, that the guys who, many of whom are participating in this, feel the exact same way that everyone else does about this. They're just not going to say it, and they can't do anything about it, which is really pathetic.
Well, that's it. It's, you know, again, there are, well, you guys both read the column, and I'm not going to mention the name or where the column is or anything. We're not going to promote that. But the guy was spot on, you know.
Yep.
And how many times have I said, you know, in this environment, you have to agree whether you agree or not, because it's your job and you have no place else to go. When there were territories, you could pick up the phone and call 25 other territories and say, look, I'm just not happy with the direction here, or I'm not being used properly, or their philosophy is not my philosophy. I'm looking to make a move. I don't care if you're a young talent or if you're one of the guys producing in the back. You know, when I found out that Brian James was now being given a tryout as a producer, I thought, God, I can't even imagine somebody who grew up in the environment he grew up in, and knowing what the business really has been and should be in terms of the basics, that to step into this and say, yeah, well, you got a 6-week tryout or whatever the hell it is. I mean, you're going to have to swallow your pride and stick everything you know in your hip pocket and nod your head and say, yes, this is great. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to do this. I mean, the frustration of that has got to be worth, you know, I don't know what they pay a producer. It's none of my business. But, you know, he should get 5 times what an actual job is worth just to live with the frustration and crap that he's got to lie every day of his life.
Well, this is coming off his brother, they won't, everybody, I don't know. Then again, I've been watching wrestling long enough to know who Scott Armstrong was, but, you know, I would figure, I won't say everybody knows who he is, but they didn't have him speak. They didn't have him speak doing the walkout thing because they didn't want to upstage anybody else. Again, it was talked about by a lot. Threw the best punch on the pay-per-view. I mean, I don't know how he does. I don't know how any of those guys honestly do it. I mean, I don't know how JR does it. I don't know, and I don't know why he does.
Well,
I don't know why.
When he speaks up a little bit, you know, and that's it. You know, I hope that WWE never goes back to Oklahoma for the simple reason I'm tired of seeing a gentleman who I respect and consider my personal friend disrespected and insulted every goddamn time that they go there. It's childish. And that's the other part. This may be a publicly held company, and there are people in that company I've worked with, I've never had a cross word with, I respect, you know, but this is just so childish and stupid and useless. I mean, it's, you know, vindictive or whatever. I don't know. This guy has saved his money, and he actually says what he thinks. We've got to put a stop to that. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's what they actually think or say, but you know, that's what it appears to be. You know, and it's just, and like the whole Michael Cole overreacting to JR being fired is like, God, it's just.
I'm so tired of hearing him.
Well, it's all, you know, and you listen, I think Booker is, you know, I consider him a friend too, and I like Booker, you know, but the whole thing that last week, and again, I don't tweet, so you modern young people probably, you know, have seen this already, but. Why he wasn't part of the walkout, he had to go to the bathroom. What? No, come on. I mean, is there any sanity? You know, it's not, I don't know. And that, you know, again, you've got bad actors who, you got, you know, it's just bad. It's just horribly bad. Punk was made to look like, I'm not sure, like a punk, I guess. You know, this rebel without a cause, or rebel with a cause, now can I wear your jacket and I'll be the announcer? Just, you know.
Well, Rob Naylor, you know what, Rob Naylor, the announcer for CW, and all around, he's a good guy, good amped up, excited guy, does the announcing for CZW. I know he's done it, you know, he's not Jim Ross, but when his name being dropped, and no one knows, by CM Punk was the highlight of that show, I think that says everything. I mean, in a way, I'm happy for CM Punk. He's now in the machine. He'll be rotated, I think, on top of the machine with Randy Orton and John Cena, but he's now just a WWE character. And like, in a way, you know what, for security and making money, and apparently his merchandise is the best-selling, finally, you know, got ahead of Cena. In a way, I'm happy for him, but damn, man, thank God for DVDs. And this was another thing Monday night that I saw and heard a lot of and it felt good to see other people say this too. Was, you know, thank God for DVDs and tapes and, you know, old memories and things like that, because that's the only sanity that you have left as a wrestling fan. And it's the only way that we're going to be able to pass down what it's supposed to be. Obviously, there's Ring of Honor and there's New Japan. There's other places. Ring of Honor, obviously, with the most hope and probably having the most impact. But thank God for that stuff, because, again, I don't know who's going to watch that show and remember it. I don't know who that made a fan of or any of this time frame and era right now. You're not building fans that are going to continue on, and they are just so incredibly stupid and short-sighted to think that this machine is just going to keep on keeping on. I mean, yeah, the Harlem Globetrotters still draw fans when they go around, but, you know, it's what it is. It's like, you know, what Les says about...
But the Harlem Globetrotters are legitimate athletes, and they are entertaining. There was nothing entertaining about this.
Well, Les, it's like almost like... But I think that's... At the very least, it's going to be like a B-rate circus. It's not like the Ringling, but, you know, that's where it's going to fall into slumping into, and... That's the only thing I can see happening. Because obviously the wrestling part of it, I don't know. It's
well,
a
you know,
to watch.
And I'm going to say this. I know all the stories, you know, everything about John Laurinaitis. My time with John in the company, now again, I don't know what he might have said in Stanford when I was out of earshot, but he and I got along. I never had a problem with him. I didn't suck up to him, and he didn't suck up to me. But, you know, every time he came, I'm Joran Laurinaitis, executive vice president of talent relations and interim general manager of Raw. How many times did he say that? I thought, I want to say, John, shut the fuck up. I think they know who you are by now. You've been out there 10 times in the last hour. You know, it's okay. But, I mean, it's just he's so wooden with that. It's just, I mean, and then Vince, who has no power, now all of a sudden is delivering messages for the, and if the board of directors doesn't look stupid at this point, I can't even imagine when they might start to look stupid. They don't even watch their own program. You know, we want this man with integrity, and I mean, it's just like I said. I mean, you can just drive yourself nuts with it, but you know, at the end of the day, we are WWE. We're innovative. We don't do wrestling. We've taken it out of the smoky bingo halls, and we've turned it into entertain. Well, okay, whatever. If this is entertainment, I don't want any. I really don't.
Mick Foley can't save this. And that's, because I can see him being the filling in for Laurinaitis after this, because apparently everybody seems to say he's imminent. As soon as he can resign, he will. He can't save this. The only way this is saved is if they bring back everybody. And again,
what is that
going to do for the future?
Mick is funny. Mick is Mick. And Mick has established that you can't take Mick serious anyway, you know? And you don't need another guy. There is no need for another on-camera personality. There's 10,000 too many already, I think, you know? And most of them can't act a lick.
By the way, Rich, are you going to see Triple H's new movie?
No. you know, everybody talked about the conspiracy in TNA. Do you think that Hogan or Russo is actually on Vince's payroll to sabotage TNA? My question here would be, do you think John Laurinaitis is on Dixie Carter's payroll to sabotage WWE?
Speaking of TNA, since you brought it up, let's go ahead and segue over to that. Obviously, I guess news coming out the day after our last show, talking about Bruce Pritchard now having final say before anything hits TV over there. I guess, you know, Vince Russo no longer has final say. Is that good for TNA?
I heard today that that's just a front to take steam off of Russo. Whether it is or not, I cannot tell you if there's any truth to that or not. I've quit, honestly, the show's DVR'd in my home, but I haven't watched a show in weeks. But the talk of the build for Bobby Roode and the talk of the video package they did in his home with his mom and dad and his wife and so forth, I wanted to see those. So I watched the last 2 weeks those video packages. I fast-forwarded through a bunch of other crap. I watched this match with Storm, which I thought was good, except for the stupid thing with Angle running in, and there's no way to – I won't live long enough for you to try to explain to me why that happened, why Angle would help Bobby Roode win. It's beyond my comprehension. But anyway, I thought this is a great build. I thought that's the best stuff they have done. You know, a lot of the other crap on the show was just what I just said, crap. But to me, with this build and the way they've done it, that match on Sunday night should be totally clean of any type of run-in or outside interference or stupid ref bumps, and they should have a hell of a match for a minimum of 25 to 30 minutes. And then at some point, they need to slip Roode over right in the goddamn middle, because that is what they built to, and anything less than that, I think, is just a waste of time. I think, is it going to turn the company around? No, it's not. I don't see that. You know, it'll take more than that, but I think it gives them something fresh. And that stuff, honestly, looked better to me in watching that than anything I've seen on Raw in the last couple of weeks.
You've watched more TNA than I have in the last month, obviously, because I haven't seen any of that. It's all still sitting in my DVR. It's still sitting there waiting.
The Roode packages are worth watching. The silly thing of him running the gauntlet through all these guys, you know, that I stopped watching when Angle came out and said, well, now since I'm a friend with Hulk and Eric, I get to make matches. Well, hell, so does a guy selling Cokes, for Christ's sake. So then I'm going to have you wrestle one of these guys here, you know, Kazarian and Styles and then finally your own partner over the next 5 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever the hell it was. And, you know, and if you get through them, then you get, well, why the hell did you have a tournament? If he won the friggin' tournament and then now, okay, here's five more hurdles. What? I mean, it's just stupid. You know, it's just. And it's like everybody's in charge, but nobody's in charge. You know, it's like, even a cattle stampede has a leader, but you can't just, you know.
Well, that's the whole thing. And I wouldn't, you know, because it's Kurt Angle, I would love to just see an epic match. And because they could do it, I would like to see Rude, you know, just miss it by that much, because I think people are into it enough, and that's one thing that they haven't screwed up was, you know, the lead up to this, and people are behind Bobby Roode, where you can extend it out for another month, even longer in theory. But the problem with that is I don't trust their TV, and I know there's supposed to be this change, and Brian Alvarez keeps saying, oh, no, Impact is better. It's like, no, the Roode stuff is good. The rest of it still sucks. And I don't trust them to actually go another month without having dumb things like this gauntlet and everything else leading up to it. Frankly, all you need them to do is talk for another month, but because I don't think that can happen, I'm on Les's side where you've got to go with Bobby Roode because, Jesus Christ, what? Again, what else are you supposed to do? When you have
well, you know,
else
something
for
I
here's
caught.
Here's the one thing
my,
you haven't screwed up.
Something I caught on the in fast-forwarding through this, and I stopped to look at it a little bit, is that Devon is still having a problem with his kids hanging out with the Pope. I thought, Jesus Christ, they're your children. Then, you know, hey, here's a picture of my kids. They're not allowed in this building when I'm here. Right? I mean,
yeah.
You bring your
storyline for, what, over a year now in different scenarios?
I don't know.
Where
long, it seems like that long. It probably hasn't been that long, but it's been a while. But, I mean, it's like here again, you're bringing your domestic problems into your business? Is that, I mean, I don't even quite understand. I didn't like it to start with, but now it's like, okay, hey, with my kids, it's keep your ass out of here. That's it. You don't come here when I'm at work. And you tell the security people you don't let these guys in. I mean, how do they get, and now they're backstage. It's not that they're out front schmoozing with the Pope. They're back in the locker room. It's, you know, I mean, it's just, I thought, my God, does anybody ever stop, do they ever stop to look at their own, the pictures they draw or the pictures they paint? I don't think so. Or it's just, I mean, it's I don't know. And you know, the shame of this all, guys, honestly, the shame of this all is that Sinclair doesn't have enough clearance, that these millions of people who watch this crap every week aren't subjected to 1 hour of decent wrestling, which can be improved upon again. As I've never had a perfect match. I've never seen a perfect match, but God, it's miles and miles better than what I'm seeing on either one of these shows.
And Leslie, I said it before we came on too, and I don't know if you had a chance to. I'm sure you probably heard about it from over the weekend. It's just, and people probably hate me saying this again, but pro wrestling without pro wrestling, again by UFC with Chael Sonnen, who apparently is always talked to Roddy Piper, and you obviously, I think, you've heard of him and know who he is. I don't know if you heard any of his comments or heard the promo in the middle of the ring, but it's just like, again, it could all be so simple. In a real sport, challenge Anderson Silva, the champion of the division, to a rematch in a loser leaves town match. That the UFC had no plans of, but basically mandated to the company, so they will probably have this rematch on Super Bowl Sunday. It's just, I don't know, it's just amazing on how simple one thing is. Just two guys who want to kick the hell out of each other, and then they're talking about it.
I want to go ahead and segue again before we do talk some UFC. Obviously, on the police blotter this week, just bad news on Travis Tomko. Apparently, he went to Chili's and decided he didn't want the baby back ribs and chose to go another route. What is the deal with this drug that these guys are so into? I mean, it's taken lives. These guys are addicted to it. Does anybody know? I mean, what oxycodone? Either
it's
one of you guys know
killer.
Anything
it's
about
a pain
this?
Killer.
But I mean,
but let
I
me
mean,
say this about
how do
Travis.
You get...
I have known Travis Tomko. He the last WWE week-long trial camp we had here, Kevin Kelly and Tom Pritchard and I. Travis was one of the people along with Styles and Morgan and, you know, Siaki and a bunch of people whose names you would know. But anyway, in that week, when he came, you know, it was at Limp Bizkit that he was head of security for, and the lead singer there, I think, is his was a child, you know, a friend of his
Fred
childhood. Barry. But anyway, when I heard the back, you know, you, when Tom and Kelly and I sat down and they told me the background, all these kids that were coming in, I remember thinking, well, here's a guy. It's just, you know, it's kind of fantasy camp for him. He's playing around because he's got this gig which pays really well. He's traveling all over the country with his rock band. And, you know, so this is just a fun week for him. But, man, by the end of that week, I had totally changed my mind. He was worked his ass off. He was respectful. He was courteous. He was sincere. He was passionate. He was everything you could ask for somebody. I mean, he didn't have a lot of experience at that point, but I saw the potential. And, you know, and ever since then, when I've run into him at different places, I've seen the same guy. I just so much hate that this happened for him. And, you know, and this is not a Matt Hardy thing. I mean, Travis has never gone on YouTube and made a fool of himself or, and you know, I was so shocked when I heard this. I really was.
Well, you know, the thing is, he obviously is crying out for help. I mean, you know, from all reports, you know, whatever did or didn't happen in the pharmacy, you know, supposedly he said there, hey, look, I'm an addict, I need help. And then, you know, when he's arrested, he said the same thing. And hopefully he gets it. I mean, you know, the bad thing is this guy, I love this guy's work. And I just can't believe that, you know, he's only 38. He's got the look. I just think he should be earning a good damn paycheck in this business. And
I guess the last time he had a tryout with the comeback to WWE, I'm told he was out of shape. He wasn't in any good shape, and he didn't show well. I couldn't tell you, you know, whether that's true or not. I mean, I assume that it must be. There's no reason somebody to lie to me about that. But that would be the first time I ever saw him that he wasn't in shape. I don't, you know, it's bad things happen to good people. You know, I heard all the horror stories about Bryan Adams. And Bryan came to me, you know, because they had nothing for him up on the main roster when I had developmental here. And he was a tremendous help to me and became a good friend. And I can't say enough good things about Bryan. It's just, you know, good people get into jams like this, too. Everybody gets into something like this is not an asshole. You know what? And Travis said that, you know, he didn't have his script and that he asked the pharmacist and the pharmacist was trying to help him out and give him the drugs. And if that's the case, then you figure the pharmacist is, you know, called the cops simply to cover his own ass because he's without X number of pills in his inventory when the drug people come around. And of course, he's got to account for those. Whether that's, I mean, I don't know, but yeah, he told the pharmacist he was an addict, and he told the cops that. And, you know, he's got a family. God, I just hope that this, you know, works out for him. I mean, I don't condone robbery or anything, but this is a good guy. I mean, he really is. And I'm guessing if he stooped to this, you know, in fact, did coerce the pharmacist into giving him the things, then, you know, he's hooked bad. But it's pain, Rich. It's, you know, and this crap is, it's kind of, you know, and I've never taken Oxy and I've never taken Soma, but from being around people and talking to people, it's your body builds a quick tolerance. So where you're doing one or two a day becomes three or four, and that becomes six or seven and eight or nine and, you know, on and on and on. I don't know what the Oxy's.
Huh? It, for all intents and purposes, it's synthetic heroin, and it's that addictive, and it works that well, which is why Brett Favre, you see Rush Limbaugh, the cross of people that are getting caught up in this, and this is, and nobody wants to say this, I've heard a few people say this, FCW, the fact that all of these guys are in Florida, obviously there's tax reasons and things like that to be there. You know, Delaware is another place where J.J. Dillon is, where you have tax breaks. I'm sorry, there's Phil Mills in Florida. Current TV did a great documentary, I think may have won a TV Emmy on it, called the Heroin Highway, or the Hillbilly Heroin in West Virginia, and these cheap flights coming from West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, to fly down to Florida where you can go doctor shopping. There's Phil Mills. A lot of guys being down there, there's too much easy access. I don't know how doctors stay in business prescribing as much of this stuff and over-medicating. I mean, they are legal drug dealers, and it's reaching such a cross effect of people. I mean, this story was extra sad to me because I saw him in New Japan, and Carl Anderson actually took over for him as the tag team partner of Prince Albert, Giant Bernard. And Tomko was looked good there. And for him to rob a Walgreens, it wasn't even like he was at one of these mills. He robs a Walgreens and goes to a Chili's to shoot it up. This man needs serious help, and it's really... And hopefully he gets that help, because, again, I was shocked to hear this. I know I hadn't heard from him in a while, but I was shocked to hear this.
Yeah, mainlining is way, way past popping a few pills. But, you know, here's the bottom line. You know, grass may be illegal, but it's not addictive. And all the crap we're talking about is prescription. You know, that's what scares me. I mean, honestly, and I don't know that consciously people think this, but I would say subconsciously their thought process is, well, the doctor gave me this, so it must be okay. I can take as much as I want, or, you know, just, and you know, take as, you know, at once every 4 hours or as needed. Well, as needed is whenever you decide, you know, and if it makes you feel good, hell, I'll need it every 15 minutes or something. I mean, honestly, it's just, I've never had a Valium or a Prozac. I've done muscle relaxers and pain pills, you know, when I was wrestling. But I always followed what it said on the bottle, and, you know, when the bottle was empty, that was it.
Anytime I've ever needed pain medication for anything that I've had happen to me, I don't know. There's just something in me. I'm just too damn scared. I won't wake up if I overdo it, you know. And like you say, when that bottle's done, that was what you were intended to have. And if you still got a problem,
it's like the thing with Solas a number of years ago. Louis Spicoli. You know, I remember reading after he died from the somas that he was up to taking 50 or 60 of them damn things a day. I mean, I can't even imagine that. You know,
I was prescribed somas, and again, I'm not a professional wrestler, or I mean, you know, playing high school sports and things like that. That's one thing, but you know, I have a pretty good pain tolerance. I took one, and I fell asleep for the night. 50 or 60, I mean, that's like the stories. I know Raven's got these stories of liquid, of taking so much, you know, liquid painkiller and stuff like that. And it's like, how are they all not walking corpses? It's amazing. And it shows you what the human body can take, too. But it boggles my mind. And the access to it is what really boggles my mind.
You know, I'm going to tell you right now, and again, I'm not advocating or denouncing anything for anybody to try or do. This is my personal opinion from being around and, you know, being an old man and having been up and down the road a few hundred times. I'll tell you, if one of my children or grandchildren, I mean, first of all, they have to be, you know, 18 years old or older, came to me with a bottle of Valium and an ounce of grass and said, I'm going to do one or the other, I'd say, smoke the damn grass and flush the other crap down the toilet. I mean, I would. You laugh if you like, but it's safe.
I'm laughing because I'm in agreement with you.
You know, I mean, it's bullshit. You know, it's the stupidest law in the land. I mean, you know, and again, I'm not saying everybody should run out and buy some grass and get stoned, but, you know, this other stuff is far, I mean, it's dangerous, man. I mean, it really is dangerous. And you know, while they're talking about wellness programs and this and that and the other thing, I think that's one of the things that needs to be addressed in this industry, and it never will because there'll never be a union. There never, you know, and the companies are in charge, or, you know, the contracts are in their favor. I mean, you know, I'm sure baseball to a certain degree is in their favor, but if you're paying me $14 million a season, I can allow something or other to be in your favor. But, you know, when a guy goes down, he's popping this crap to mask the pain so he can go back to work because he's afraid he's going to lose his spot or somebody's going to get his job. There should be assurances, and they, you know, that a guy, you know, if you're the third match from the opener and, you know, you have an injury and you're going to be out 8 weeks or something, I don't want you back. You know, that I will say this for Jim Crockett Sr., when I had hepatitis in 1972 in Charlotte, you know, which is the weakest I ever was in my life, God love him. My whole day for 6 weeks was getting showered, driving to my doctor's, going in the back door, getting a B12 shot, driving home. And by that time, I felt so damn tired I couldn't stay awake. But he would call me. He would send somebody by with money, which he didn't have to do. And then he would call me and, "How you doing? Well, Jim, you know, do you need anything? Is your car payment taken care of? Is your rent pay?" I said, "Jim, I got the money." No, that's for groceries and stuff. Do you need anything?" No, I don't. But the bottom line, before the conversation was over, is, "Look, baby, hey, baby, take your time. Don't rush." You know, I'd say, "Well, I'll try to be back to work." No, that's not the point. You get well, then you come back to work. And then when I did come back, he saw that I, you know, because I'd lost 6 weeks, he saw to it that I was on. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't run into the main event the first day I was back or anything, but he saw to it that I was on several of the big Coliseum shows, because it was Thanksgiving time when I came back, and to make me more, to be sure that I made money. And you got to learn, that's why I'm so appreciative of this man, because he was concerned for my health. It wasn't, "Yeah, get your ass back to work," or, and I didn't have to fear that I didn't have a job when I came back. And I think that's part of the problem with a lot of the young guys today is, "God, I can't take a day off, or I won't have a job, or somebody's going to take my spot." There has to be assurances, I think, to help these guys emotionally and mentally not want to get, I don't think anybody wants to get hooked on this stuff, but it's, in part, I think, due to what I'm just talking about, I got to hurry up and get back in gear. Otherwise, if I don't, I'm not going to have my spot. I'm going to lose my blah, 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 So.
Right. Yeah, sad stuff. And again, God, let's hope Tomko gets the help he needs. Mike, you got to see UFC 136 over the weekend. Your thoughts?
It was a really good show from top to bottom. I mean, as you see a lot of the card that airs on the preliminary card that aired on Facebook, which that stuff's going to be moving to the Fuel Network, which is, the parent company is Fox, FX, where the programming of the UFC is going to be going. They're going to start airing on there, which is a lot better than watching on a computer screen, so I'll be happy about that. But from top to bottom, is a really good card. And again, the highlight of the thing was Chael Sonnen, who defeated Brian Stann, who, the All-American fighter, and Sonnen, who has got all the controversy around him and everything that's taken place with testosterone replacement, getting indicted for being part of a housing fraud thing or funneling with his, his mother's company, and, also being the only guy to give Anderson Silva a run for his money in the UFC, beating him for 4.5 rounds before getting caught and submitted. But it's the fight that everybody really wants to see. And last week, there was talk of Dan Henderson coming over from Strikeforce and getting the shot against Anderson Silva. And that's a good fight. People would want to see that fight. But then Chael Sonnen comes in, defeats Brian Stann, and in the middle of the ring says, "If I want Anderson Silva," cuts a little bit of a wrestling-style promo and says, "If I beat you, you leave the division. If you beat me, I will leave the UFC forever." Rogan pulls the mic away from him. He walks out, and people lose their minds. And just like that, they do. The UFC just did professional wrestling better than pro wrestling does now. But the main event, the actual main event, was Frankie Edgar defending the 155-pound title, defeating Gray Maynard in their third bout that they've had now. They're one win for each guy, one loss, and one draw for each. But Edgar is 1-0-1 in the title fight, so Maynard's not going to get a shot again for a while. And Frankie looked good, knocked Maynard out in the fourth round. And just he is a little New Jersey wrestling machine and is fantastic to watch. And this show probably didn't do a lot pay-per-view-wise, but and people are making fun of that. This might only do about 350,000 buys. And people are making fun of the fact that the UFC's buy rates are only 400,000. And, yeah, they had one here at 800,000 a couple months ago. But, still, I know it may not be as great as it could be, but 400,000 every single month I'm sure wrestling and boxing combined would take that.
You know, I didn't know much about either one of those guys, and I watched the pre-fight, you know, the show on Spike, and I didn't buy, you know, I don't buy pay-per-views, anybody's pay-per-views. If somebody invites me to watch them, I do. But I got interested in these two guys because, you know, there was the whole thing about, you know, the draw and should it have been a draw and the whole thing. But they built my interest. That was the thing. I know I heard Dave and Brian saying, well, you know, there's not a lot of interest here and this and that. But I thought, wow, you know, I'm not a diehard MMA fan. But, again, I wasn't too familiar with either guy. But at the end of that hour, I was interested, you know. I thought, Jesus, you know, and watching the clips from the fights, realized that both these guys, were committed and you know, dedicated to what they were doing.
It's kind of like a Gotti Ward sort of thing that it was in boxing. And I don't know, did any of you guys see the commercial leading up to this? There's been a couple good commercials the UFC's produced. It was before St. Pierre and Koscheck, where they were all ripping down the names of their opponents that they had beaten since they had last fought on the locker room. And, you know, the last one they put up on the mirror when they're training, the last one they're looking at is themselves. And GSP and John Fitch had one, or I'm sorry, not John Fitch, Jake Shields, where it was, you know, Shields being reflective over GSP getting all the glory, and he's got all his awards behind him. And then they pass walking down the in the backstage area after GSP had won his last fight, and they stare each other down. They did another one here that was very inventive. It was just people, and you would, if the commercial came on, you wouldn't really know what people were talking about. As I thought Frankie won, but they reached across a bunch of lifestyles. It was two women talking on the beach, and then, you know, two guys over here, and people debating with each other. And it was just a minute long promo that they did, but it was really, really well done. And that, again, there are a lot of people are maybe business-wise are looking at the pay-per-view numbers and overexposure and this, that, and the other. It's stuff like that as they ascend onto network TV now that just it makes everything better. And again, two guys at 155 pounds who are wrestling machines for the most part, the general public probably shouldn't care about, but it's those types of commercials and less like what you watch, the countdown show leading into this thing, which makes you want to see these little guys fight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's.
Go ahead, Les.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
I was about to change the subject, so if you got a thought, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say. I said that's what's interested me in the Rude thing. It's not just stupid interviews and Rude running in on Angle and Angle running on Rude, but it's the home thing. Bobby's mother and father and his wife and how hard he's worked for this and there's some human interest to it, you know.
Well,
and,
you know, to play off that, and something that Mike actually said earlier too about, you know, just or you said it earlier about, you know, watching the pre-show thing with Edgar and Maynard. You know, you don't even have to know the guys in Ring of Honor, but if you watch an episode of Ring of Honor and just see one of their video packages or something they put up online. I've actually turned a few people on to Ring of Honor that never bothered watching before, just simply because of the production of the way they tell a story. And you know, you can get drawn in by people you don't know if the story is told well enough.
Well, you know, it gives you some foundation for these people. It gives them more substance. And I think that's, you know, that's really so important. That's the one thing that Jimmy's doing right on the three shows thus far, you know, is he tells you a little bit about what's coming up next week and why and who. And then, you know, the pre-fight, you know, it's like with Roderick Strong and Davey Richards. It's obvious we don't like each other, but, you know, I'm the football hero that loves, you know, going to sorority parties and scoring with the chicks, and on the other hand, Richards is a guy who's dedicates this to his grandparents, who gave him his work ethic, and he runs a training camp opposed to this and that. I mean, to differentiate between the personalities and everything, and you know, God, it's just, you know, I've seen it. Oh, I know where I saw it, Personality Profile, 1975. Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, where is your check, by the way? I'm sure it's in the
yeah. Well, you know what? Jimmy became a fan of those. He was, I think I told you last week, Jimmy was, his first television exposure was on my Personality Profile when the WFIA, Wrestling Fans International, had their
right.
convention in Knoxville, and I had him and Jim Melby on the show. But, you know, well, you know, say what you like. It's important to know something. I enjoy, I don't watch every baseball game or every football game, but when they do profiles, you know, and human interest stuff on the players, I enjoy watching that because it gives me a little, you know, insight, you know, into that particular person. The Albert Pujols thing they did on 60 Minutes, I really enjoyed that. I had, you know, again, I had no idea how low he was drafted and, you know, and how little anybody expected from this guy. And he's going to end up, you know, being one of the top five or ten hitters of history in baseball, for Christ's sake.
The year Albert Pujols, and we're going to move on to something else after this, but the year Albert Pujols broke and just you know, his breakout year, I was actually playing fantasy baseball back then, and I'll never forget, I did the automatic draft thing on Yahoo, part of coworkers and stuff that I was working with, and I ended up with Albert Pujols, and I just remember looking at my roster and going, who the hell is this guy? And I'm like, you know, I got to trade this guy. And I end up sitting on him for a while, and all of a sudden here he's like belting out 8 home runs in a month, and it was like, okay, never mind.
You know, one thing real quick. That one of the things that I enjoy about the NFL season and is watching the pregame stuff on Sundays with the ex-ball players, because I don't, you know, unlike most people on wrestling message boards, I don't consider myself an expert at football because I watch it. But these guys set the stage for me so often, you know, Tony Dungy and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Boomer Esiason and Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long and guys like that, because they give you some insight, you know, and why this team should be better, why it's not better, why they, you know, so-and-so's got a defense against this because this is their strength. And it's just, I think it adds more interest. And I think that's what Jimmy's doing with Ring of Honor. And I think it's all this silliness. And that's the best thing that I think Impact or TNA or whatever the hell you want to call it has done a long time, this thing with going to Rude's home and involving his family. And it's, you know, it has set the stage. And I think they were smart enough to save him and Storm for the very last of this gauntlet thing. And like I say, my only hope is that they are smart enough, and I'm afraid they're not, to have this match be clean of any type of run-ins or stupid ref bumps or convoluted bullshit finishes, where these guys should go 25, 30 minutes, have a hell of a match, which I know they can, and where it looks like the champ is going to maintain and Rude catches him in a you know, a mistake or just a miscue, boom, and ends up getting his hand held in the air and leave that belt on him for a while and feed him some, you know, some contenders. And because it'll be fresh, you know, and something different than, I don't want to see Sting and Hogan. I have no desire to see that. I just,
well, something tells me you'll get half your wish. They'll probably go about 25, 30 minutes, and then, you know, all hell will break loose. Wanted to talk about something that came out today. It was announced today. Obviously, the Waterloo, Iowa Hall of Fame already has announced the two headline inductees for next summer's class, and it consists of Kurt Angle and Don Curtis. Obviously, well-deserved kudos there. The rest of the class will be announced special award winners in November. A lot of people that listen to this show know who Kurt Angle is and have no problem with that. But some people may not really be that familiar with Don Curtis. Les, why don't you educate some people?
Well, I'm going to be extremely biased because Don Curtis was one of my dearest friends, and I was so upset that I was booked and had plane tickets to work a training camp. At the time of his passing, Dottie and I still stay, his wife, his widow, and I still stay in contact. Don Curtis was a hell of a shooter, a hell of a tough son of a bitch. I don't know how else to say it, but just a sweetheart of a guy with a tremendous sense of humor and so caring and giving of himself. As a young man, I was, you know, he and Mark Lewin wrestled the Grahams in New York, Madison Square Garden, when tag teams were hot in up there, and drew huge houses. Don was, the Florida State champion, tremendous. He and Eddie Graham were close, and Don became a fixture in Florida. He and Dottie lived in Jacksonville, and he actually became the manager of the old Jacksonville Coliseum, which I have a brick here. That when they tore that place down, that is autographed to my friend Les, who's as stiff as this brick from the Jacksonville Coliseum. signed Don Curtis. Don was a pilot. He had his multiple engine license. He was a commercial flyer, an intelligent human being. My first encounter with Don, when I went into Florida, into the Tampa in 1967, as the NWA Rookie of the Year. My first match in Tampa at the old Fort Hesterly Armory, I read in the paper, the shows were run there on Tuesday night, read in Monday's paper, that rookie sensation Les Thatcher was going to wrestle Don Curtis. And I never met Don, but I knew his reputation, and I knew he could go, you know, and I thought, Jesus, of all the time, man, you know, I better be right. I mean, and to be honest with you, I was nervous, you know. I mean, I was a 26-year-old kid, and, you know, this was, I had been invited to this territory, a place where at the time I would have never sent an application because I didn't think that I had, you know, that I had the experience to go there, and was so honored when Eddie, invited me to come into the territory. But anyway, I went into the Armory that night, and like I say, I was nervous, you know. And I saw Don come into the dressing room and speak to Eddie, and they looked toward me, and I guess he was saying, who am I working with? And Eddie's saying, the kid's over there. He came over and introduced himself and said, do you mind if I sit here? And I said, no, sit down. And by the time we went to the ring, we were fast friends. He made me feel so freaking comfortable. We went out there and had a hell of a match. And from that point forward, we were buddies. You know, he was our commissioner for Southeastern in Knoxville. He's, just a hell of a guy. The last time we got together in K-Town, Thanksgiving, it was Harley defending a title against Slater. Dottie and their daughters, who were both just teenagers at the time, Don flew the family in, and Dottie brought a smoked turkey and brought it to my apartment, and that's where we had Thanksgiving dinner after the show, and Harley came over as well. They were family to me. But Don was just a gracious, he refereed amateur wrestling. He was a tremendous handball player. I mean, a competitive handball player. Won titles. He was a great amateur wrestler in his own. He's in the University of Syracuse, where he went to school, I think. Anyway, he's in their Sports Hall of Fame. Like I say, he was the manager of the Jacksonville Coliseum. A very funny story that happened in that territory in 1971. We were at Jacksonville for a show. Danny Miller, Ron Fuller, Terry Funk, God, I don't remember who all was on the show. But anyway, Don was the promoter of record at the time. He was living there. And mm-hmm. There was going to be a rodeo in the old Jacksonville Coliseum. And the front man for the rodeo had introduced himself to Don and said, would you mind letting me, plug our rodeo coming up next week or whenever it was during your intermission? And Don was being gracious. No, that'll be fine. And so intermission, we're all standing around in the back, waiting for the show to start again. And the guy goes out, and Don, here's so-and-so from whatever the name of the rodeo was, and, say a few words. And Don had come to the back, and the guys start talking about, you know, we're going to have bull riding and calf roping and, you know, bucking broncos and this and that. And, you know, rodeo is all, you know, all this and that. It's not at all like professional wrestling. Man, was that the wrong thing to say. Don Curtis never said a word to a soul, walked straight down to that ring, grabbed the mic out of the guy's hand and knocked him on his ass right there in front of several thousand people. Dropped him like a bad habit. But he was such a – but again, like I say, he was such a sweetheart. We were lifelong friends. I guess the last time I actually got to see Don as he was starting to slip into dementia was he and Dottie were in Mobile for the reunion there. But when he was flying commercial stuff, when I was living in Pensacola, if he was he flew some businessmen in and around there, he would call and say, I'm in town and I'm going to get a car and come out. And he'd come out to the house and we'd just hang out. Tremendous athlete, always in shape. I'll tell you what, the first time I ever saw a Hurricane Rana, it wasn't called that. It was a front flying head scissors, and Don Curtis executed it. And here's a guy who was over 6 feet tall. This was no cruiserweight. This was no Mexican, you know, little guy. This was a big man. And he did what you call a Hurricane Rana now. He called a front flying head scissor. And this is back in the 60s, for Christ's sake. Hell of a worker, hell of a gentleman, a class act, a hell of a professional. Loved him like a brother, and yes, he deserves to be in every Hall of Fame that's ever been. He honestly does.
Yeah, I got to meet him one time down in Mobile. Just a really, really sweet guy, just a gentleman. Speaking of class acts, just last week, as a matter of fact, while we were doing our show up in Charlotte. Mick Foley was I guess, at the helm of a benefit for Shane Helms, trying to help raise some money for him to cover some medical costs. Word is, I guess, they drew more than a couple hundred people and raised, I guess, more than $5,000, according to what I'm seeing. And Ric Flair and Edge were a part of this. I believe Jeff Hardy sent some stuff in, as did Chris Jericho, stuff to help raise some money. And good work there, and of course, you know, Foley's been doing just a ton of great work for people lately, and in a business where we so often end up hearing bad stories, and this guy, you know, this guy's this, and that guy's that, and you know, here's one of the guys that's actually just, you know, using his celebrity for nothing but good. You got to admire that.
Yeah, Mick's a good guy. He really is, and I think. I think I'm correct in saying that Shane actually is not accepting the money as for himself, but is starting some sort of fund to help educate young people about, you know, the hazards of drinking and driving or drugs.
Oh, cool.
And drive or whatever. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think that's what it's going to be for too.
All right, you know, Mike, are you still with us?
I am, and I was actually just—I was thinking about something as Les was talking about Don Curtis. How, because Mark Lewin was on the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot again this year, or I think maybe back this year because they added in a Australia section, which they're, you know, Prince Iaukea or King Iaukea is on there. He was on there. The Grahams get credit in New York, and there's been—I mean, all of those teams. How great was the Curtis and Lewin team as far as in lore and as far as the money that was made up there? And what was it about that era? Because Charlotte was a big tag team territory. I know Florida really wasn't, but New York at the time was really, you know, a little bit before, driven by tag teams. What was it about that era that became so popular? Was it just because it was new and it took off?
Well, I think it was, you know, I'm not sure when they, you know, as a young man, when I first became a fan, you know, in the late 40s, it was called Australian Tag Teams, because I you know, which I assume is a work too. I don't know where the hell
with the
tag
kangaroos
started going. Huh?
Was that because of the work because of the kangaroos?
Well, no, just because that was apparently that's where they were saying that it started. Tag team wrestling started was in Australia, But I remember hearing here, this is an Australian tag team match, you know, two out of three falls, that sort of thing. I think the advent of television in the late 40s and into the early 50s made it, because it was new, you know, it was fresh. I don't know that in the 30s they even had tag matches, you know. You don't hear back in the times of Stecker and Gotch and Hackenschmidt, you know, anything about tag team matches or Strangler Lewis. You know, it's all about singles individual competition. And so I think it was at its zenith then. It was so fresh. But, yeah, it was, Eddie and Dr. Jerry Graham and Rocca and Perez. Was it Bruiser and Graham that created such a hell of a riot there with in Madison Square Garden, where they almost banned wrestling? It was against Rocca and Perez, where they had a full-scale riot where they had to call out the New York City Riot Squad.
That was around that time. Was Watson 1-2 up there when he was part of the team? I'm trying to think of who he was teaming with when they were the U.S. I guess it would have been the U.S. tag champions then.
Well, that was more in the 60s, because Bill didn't start in the business until, hell, Bill was a rookie. I started before Watts did. I'm trying to think, who was his partner? Was it Spiros Arion? Was that Bill's partner, or was it...
Hold on. I got to try to find the almanac here, because, darn it.
Lewin and Curtis were a hot babyface team. They were a hot babyface team. You know, you don't want to hear my negatives about that friggin' Hall of Fame. If you weren't in the modern era, then nobody thinks you're worth a goddamn. And there's guys on that ballot, and I've mentioned that today this year too, that I don't even know why they're on that ballot, quite frankly. I won't mention any names because I don't want to insult anybody. But there's some names on there. I'm thinking if they're on there, by God, I should be on there too. And when I say that, I mean that sincerely. And I don't expect to be on there.
We'll absolutely be picking that Hall of Fame apart here in the next couple of weeks, because I guess the issue's coming out in, 2 weeks? No big surprise here, but I voted for the Andersons again.
Well, you know what? Dave and I have had that conversation. I don't give a damn. They only worked two territories in their lives at one of the greatest tag teams. And I know this for a fact because I worked with them. You know, I didn't read about them. I didn't hear about them. I worked with them. I watched them draw money. They were great workers. Ole was a hell of a promo. And they drew money with everybody they worked with in both those, you know, the Carolinas and Georgia. Well, they didn't travel a lot. Well, good. You know what?
If they didn't have to.
Anybody that worked in our era would have said, good for them.
Yeah.
You know what? None of us would have traveled if we didn't have to. I mean, do you think that – I didn't get in the wrestling business so I could pack up a U-Haul trailer and move from town to town. Take my word for it. That was not a – in fact, I might have wrestled longer if I could have stopped moving. You know, that was the worst part of it, was the friggin' road. There were territories I didn't go to because I wasn't interested in hauling my ass clear across the United States to find out that that the business wasn't good, and I'd haul my ass back to the other side. I never left the Southeast once I established myself in Tampa, Knoxville, Mobile, Atlanta, and Charlotte. There was no reason to. You know, you didn't have a lot of snow, so you didn't lose a lot of days to bad weather. And when you had to make a move, it was a lot easier to run down I-85 from Charlotte to Atlanta, or you know, or over to Mobile, or up to Nashville, or whatever. I mean, it's just it was good common sense, you know. And if you're being punished for it, I can't understand why you punish people for that.
Yeah, let's hold those rants. I'm sure we'll be going through it in a couple of weeks. Mike, did the crack research team find out the answer to that, or are we ready to move on?
Oh, I just want to run a couple of these teams, because when you go down, it is amazing. The Bastines, the Grahams, the Kangaroos, and these are guys who had held the belts at that time, you know, leading into the WWF era. Johnny Valentine and Buddy Rogers, Johnny Valentine and Bob Ellis, Brute Bernard and Skull Murphy, the Toloses, Gorilla Monsoon and Cowboy Bill Watts, the Sicilians, I mean, yeah, they were some, they were pretty good teams.
Yeah, they were, you know, and tag teams were made important, and you did, you know, and it, and some of these guys still wrestled singles, too. That was the thing, you know, it wasn't unheard of that you, I mean, like with Becker and Weaver, you know, Weaver would end up getting a shot at the title, a singles title, but him and George were still the top babyface team in that territory for a while. It's just, again, guys, it comes back to how people are packaged, how they're put, manipulated, how they're presented to the public, and how they're booked. If you know, if you know, it's all important. It's so well. You know, I had this conversation on Weekly, where Dave said, "I don't know if you listened to it or not, Mike. You should if you didn't, because I shot our God fearing leader there in the foot."
I did hear it, absolutely.
He's wrong. I haven't heard from him, so he probably isn't speaking to me anymore. But I really don't care. He's wrong. And you know, I said to Missy Hyatt, we communicate via email. When I have to defend Ricky Steamboat's talent, I said it's a sad friggin' day for the business.
I didn't understand what he meant. I didn't understand it, and I just tell me if I'm wrong here, because I wasn't there. But I thought Ricky Steamboat made money with Paul Jones. I thought Ricky Steamboat made money. Wrestling Harley Race, and it just, I'm like, I'm sitting here and it's like, I know he was my favorite from the time I was a little kid, but I'm not dead. I mean, I remember this. I know that he did these other things. Damn, Dave, don't overthink this, or whatever it is that you're doing, because it did a great disservice.
Well, you know, it's like I said there, okay, here's the thing. When he went to WWF, okay, they stuck a friggin' dragon tail on him. I think if they haven't proved anything else with the new invention of wrestling, is that when you put stupid gimmicks on people, I don't care how talented they are, it diminishes their value in drawing you money. With the exception of The Undertaker and, you know, Mankind, or, you know, a couple deals like that are the exceptions. But, and the other part was that when you send his wife and his child to the ring with him, this handsome young guy becomes less attractive to the single young females. And let's face it, we drew, you know, that was a huge part of our business in the 60s and the 70s and into the 80s was, you know, the young females. You know, if you guys aren't, but, you know, it's like when Ricky Nelson got married, you didn't want to, you know, Richie Valens was married, the big rock stars of the 50s, you didn't want to tell people that because their promoters thought this, you know, was diminished their value, because then the little girls didn't fantasize about, I want to marry Ricky Nelson someday. So, did he draw as well? No, he didn't draw as well there, but then that's their fault. You know, they're the ones that put the stupid tail on him and had him spitting gasoline out to set it on fire. You know, and with all that, he and Savage still went out and stole WrestleMania 3. Whether you like that or whether Hogan likes that or not, they went out and stole the friggin' show. Ricky drew, you know, and my comment on, well, you only heard about him and Flair. Well, you hear about Briscoe and Funk because that was, you know, a highlight. That was a special thing. You hear about Rogers and O'Connor, you know, but that doesn't mean that's the only people they drew money with. You know, he worked with Mulligan in singles. Plus, his tag team worked there. You know,
Slaughter
and Carnoodle, but they drew with the Briscoe. He and Youngblood drew with the Briscoes. Hell, Ricky is the consummate friggin' babyface. I mean, in terms of facial expressions and body language and the way he would sell and fire up for a comeback, every friggin' idiot that thinks he knows how to work in this business a day under the age of 30 should sit down and watch every footage, every inch and every minute of every video they can find on Ricky Steamboat, because that is probably the consummate baby face in my lifetime, honestly.
All right. We're going to segue there to our last segment. Something I want to do. Mike kind of threw this out last week, and I think we all kind of thought it might be a good idea. Of course, up at ringsiderap.com, we got the recommended reading section where we each list our worthy dozen. books that we recommend for folks. And, of course, those lists will change from time to time as new things come out, or somebody maybe remembers something or goes back over something and wants to change their list up. But
yeah, I got about five more books I want to add on there.
Well, yeah, I didn't. All mine didn't make it either, but that's all right, Mike. We didn't raise our hand to be asked to talk. Go ahead, Rich.
So anyway, all right. So basically, we talked a little bit about Mick Foley earlier, and I was actually going to try. I figured, okay, our first shot at this, let's talk about somebody that maybe made each one of our lists. The thing is, none of us had a single book that actually made each list. But you guys both listed one of Mick Foley's books. Mike, you listed a couple of them. I didn't list any because, frankly, I just have not read any. So here's what we're going to do this week. Sell me on why Mick Foley's books made your list.
Mike, you may remember more about it. I'll tell you why. His first book, I've read all his books. I don't think any of them match his first one. But what sold his first one for me is reading the book. It was like talk, you know, knowing Mick, it was like listening to Mick talk to me. The fact that that book was handwritten on legal pads, and part of it was being written when he was here in Cincinnati for the second Pillman Show, speaking of charity events. He was here for that, and he was writing at that time. And also, at that particular show, he mentions it in his book that he and Flair have been at odds, for like ever. And, they were both in the same locker room, and they were both very professional because it was about somebody else and wasn't about them. And it was about a person who they both, admired and were friends with, and Brian Pillman. So, but it's Mick has a hell of a sense of humor. Sometimes it doesn't come across on paper, but I think of all his books, I think it came across for me the strongest in his first book.
That's Michael. What I liked about it. I've always been a big audiobook fan, and I've just always been a reader anyway, but I liked when audiobooks came out because when you have somebody who is, so great at talking and, a person you can get into is fantastic. And I didn't see if there was an audio book for Mick Foley's, but he didn't need it because, again, it was like he was talking to you and you could see his sense of humor that came out of it. And the fact that, he did this thing, he's such a fascinating character for what he did in his career and the choices he made. And it's just everything about him, he's just fascinating. And he comes across great. The fact that it made the New York Times bestseller list, the fact that it was out of the mold of the WWF books at that time, the fact that it opened up so many doors, I never liked thumbtacks, I never liked the fire stuff, anything in Japan, falling off the cage. It's an amazing spectacle, but, I've always been more of a Flair type of guy than a Foley guy. But it was because of that book that I actually invested even more into him of how much of a well-rounded person he was. And again, writing this down on notebook paper, not wanting, not really knowing how to, use a computer and tapping the thing out. It just, everything about it was fantastic. And then it led to the Foley is Good book, which was how everything had changed after that book and how he had changed, after the Attitude Era, after watching himself on Beyond the Mat, all of those things and the PR stuff that he did and how great it just, him, it was the creation of him as ambassador, which, Rich, like you talked about when he was doing the stuff for Shane Helms and the fact that he goes around to all of these shows and the fact that, Vince McMahon, while he was working for TNA, promoted his newest book that he had just did and I haven't read. But it's like, that's the type of thing Mick Foley can do, raising the money for the Rape and Incest National Network. It's just, those books, I think, are must reads because, you got to support a guy who represents what he did so incredibly well, even if you didn't like, his style of what he did when he was wrestling.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on books?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, read.
Other than you're going to send me some new lists. There you go. Yeah, read all you can.
all right. I guess that's going to do it for us tonight. Les, what do you got coming up that you want to plug?
Nothing. Poverty. That's what I've got coming up. I want to plug. Send your donations. No. I don't have, you know, just eye surgery coming up in the first part of November. Other than that, nothing, just getting older. I wish I could say wiser, but probably not.
Are you plugging the eye surgery?
No, yeah. Well, you know, Mickey James, you know, was asking for a donation on that site for her to help her make her record. Yes, if you'd like to help me pay for my eye surgery.
There you go. Maybe we can get Foley.
The president damn sure doesn't want to help, so I'd like to help somebody else.
Occupy Cincinnati. All right. So, Mike, what do you got going on?
At some point here, Adam Summers and I will be able to get together and record the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Apparently, all the money he spent on Chicago Blackhawks season tickets will take precedence over the show sometimes, but that'll happen from time to time. But we should be recording that soon, and if nothing else, I'll be back with our fearless leader, Brian Alvarez, on Sunday, Wrestling Observer Live from 6 to 8 on the sportsbyline.com, or go to wrestlingobserver.com to find out the information on that. Hopefully he doesn't trap me in a never-ending whining rant about weight cutting, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I do want to mention, too, that, you know, I'm doing the Wrestler's Eye radio with Mike Johnson on PW Insider every week, and then the weekends with Will Strauss and Vic Socia in Doc's absence on Wrestling Weekly on the Observer Figure 4 site. And I'm open for bookings. Apparently all the independents have gotten so friggin' good they don't need any, but if you're interested, you know, Les at epwt.com and contact me. I'd be happy to call you and talk to you about the situation and what I do and how to do it and so forth.
All right. And I want to remind everybody, too, stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Stay tuned to RingsideRap.com. And, of course, the GWH Radio Network continues not tomorrow night, as Peach State Pandemonium will have the week off once again. Mike Norris out on the road. They will return hopefully next Thursday night. And don't forget, if you missed the debut this past Monday of Georgia Wrestling Now, they will be back on Monday of next week. New weekly show covering the local scene in Georgia and various events around the Southeast. Once again, I guess that's it for us tonight. We thank you for listening and hope to see you here next week. We're out.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.